going to be reading from one of my favorite books this morning. It's kind of a book that's a life lesson book, tells you how to live your life. So we're going to start with James 1, 1 through 18. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes in the dispersion, greetings. My brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you is lacking in wisdom, ask God, who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, and it will be given you. But ask in faith, never doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For the doubter, being double-minded and unstable in every way, must not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Let the believer who is lowly boast in being raised up, and in rich in being brought low, because the rich will disappear like a flower in the field. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the field. Its flowers fall and its beauty perishes. It is the same way with the rich. In the midst of a busy life, they will wither away. Blessed is anyone who endures temptation. Such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. No one, when tempted, should say, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself tempts no one. But one is tempted by one's own desire, being lured and enticed by it. Then, when that desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and that sin, when it is fully grown, gives birth to death. Do not be deceived, my beloved. Every generous act of giving with every perfect light gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. In fulfillment of his own purpose, he gave us birth by the word of truth, so that we would become a kind of first fruits of his creatures. It was kind of a familiar scene as the pastor shook hands with people leaving the worship, just like we do here. At the end of the line was a man who occasionally attended church. And as the man came through and shook the pastor's hand, he said, Reverend, what you said today was exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you so very much. It was so helpful to me. It revolutionized my life. Thank you. The pastor was kind of surprised, yet pleased that his words had made such a profound difference. I'm glad I said something that was helpful to you, but I'm curious, what in particular was it? Without a moment's thought, the man answered, well, you remember when you began your sermon by saying that you wanted to talk to us about two things this morning, and then in the middle you said, that completes the first part of what I wanted to tell you, and now it's time to move on to the second part of my sermon. And at that moment I realized I had come to the end of the first part of my life, and it was high time that I got on with the second part. Thank you, Reverend. Thank you so very much. In a sense, today we are beginning the second half of our life. For as they used to say many years ago, there was a saying that went around that today is the beginning of, is the first beginning of the rest of your life. And that's really true. Today is the first day of the beginning of the rest of your life. And how we live that life is important. And the book of James tells us how to live that life. And I encourage you to read it. I encourage you to read the whole Bible, but read the book of James. It is a good life lesson. So my purpose this morning is to challenge you, if you're not already doing so, to set a time each day to hear the word. Spend 15 minutes, coffee break time. Just 15 minutes reading the Bible, and you'll be surprised it won't be long before you go from cover to cover. And at least you'd be familiar with the Bible. You probably wouldn't know it real good, but you'd be familiar with it. The Bible is really meant to be studied, not just read. But you know, we see in our society the people that they're willing to get out and jog or play tennis or walk or whatever it is to improve their bodies. Some of them even go to night school or whatever to improve their minds. So how big a deal would it be to take that kind of time out, that little bit of time, to read the Bible. And getting into why this is important, I want to clear up some misconceptions about the Bible and what it is not. The Bible is not a book of magic. If you start reading the Bible, all your problems are not going to mysteriously disappear. If you start carrying it in your car, it will not prevent an accident. If you carry it close to your heart, it won't necessarily stop a stray bullet. There's nothing magical about the Bible. And I make that point because there are those who would use the Bible as a fortune teller, or tarot cards, or a good luck charm, or for other bizarre reasons. It is not a magic book. There was a great statesman who, when he was sick, would eat pages out of the Bible for a cure, which seems kind of silly to us today, I'm sure, but he thought it was helping, and I doubt that it was really healing anything. They claim he had a stroke, and as he recovered from that stroke, he tried eating the entire book of Kings, but he died before he finished it. The Bible is not a book of magic. It's not something that is going to miraculously heal you. God heals, and he talks to you through the Bible. Woody Allen once made the crack that a friend of his carried a bullet with him. One time it saved his life. It miraculously stopped a Bible that someone threw at him. Bibles are not meant to clobber people over the head either. You hear people talk about the Bible thumping preacher. He's thumping you over the head with it. That's not the way to do it either. The Bible should be used with compassion. Preachers should use it with compassion. Now, the book of James is probably the most practical book in the New Testament. He doesn't really waste any time with theological arguments. It's not about the Gospels. It's not, anything theological in purpose. It is about life. And he offers good, practical, down-to-earth advice. Advice that we can use every day. And there's a reason the book of James is this way. It's written for people who had just been converted to Christianity. Back when the church was just starting out and people were being converted, there weren't a lot of people around to go to help you out. Kind of like that buddy that keeps you accountable. So James was writing this to let those people know how to live their lives so they could continue in their journey as a Christian. Becoming a Christian is easy. Staying a Christian is not that easy. And so James was kind of written to help them along. And sometimes we today even need help in our Christian lives and how we live our lives and staying away from the temptations he talks about. And there are several very important things that he brings out. The first is let God do the leading, since all things come from above, from the Father of lights. Let God lead you. He writes, every generous act of giving with every practical gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. And often we fall into temptation of thinking that all good things that happen are of our own efforts. But God makes these things happen. God makes these good things happen in our lives. It's not because of something in the world around us. It's not because of something that we did. It's because God wanted to provide for us something good. I think I may have told this story before. It's been quite a while back. There was a woman who wanted to be a missionary to India. And no matter how she tried, she didn't get there. And she couldn't understand why God was keeping her from going to India. And then her mother was in a really bad accident, so she went to care for her mother. About 3 years worse, and her mother passed away, and she thought, okay, now's my chance. Wasn't going to happen. God had other plans. Turns out her sister became seriously ill, so she went to take care of her sister until her sister passed on. And then shortly after that, her brother-in-law passed on as well. So she wound up with five children, nieces and nephews. She wound up with them to care for them. And she did a really good job of caring for them, bringing them up in a Christian environment and raising them up to be good, mature Christians. And it's then when she finally figured out why God didn't want her to go to India. Because out of those five children that she raised, three of them became missionaries to India. See, God had a plan. He wasn't going to send her, that one person, to India. He was going to send three missionaries to India. So we got to let God lead us. Even though it may not make sense to us at the time, you have to let God lead you. There's hymns about following God, about He leadeth me, and those kinds of things. There's an Alan Jackson song that I really like. It's called Wherever He Leads, I'll Go. And that's what it talks about. Let God lead you. And the next thing that James talks about is be quick to listen and slow to speak. We should be good listeners. We don't necessarily have to be talking all the time. And I'm sure we've all been in the situation where we're talking with somebody and they're talking to us, and instead of really listening, you're trying to figure out in your mind what you're going to respond. So you don't really hear them. We need to learn to listen, and then when they get through talking, then figure out what you're going to say to them. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. Because oftentimes if we don't do that, we miss something important that they said because our mind is somewhere else. Harvard scholar Charles Copeland once had a student who asked him why there were no courses in conversation. There wasn't anything to teach people how to converse. Copeland looked at the student and said, "Oh, of course there is. And if you'll just listen, I'll tell you what it is." Well, they stood there for a little bit. The student stared at Professor Copeland and kind of got awkward. And finally, he said, "Well, I'm listening." And Professor Copeland looked at him and said, "You see, you're learning already. You have to learn to be quiet sometimes and listen." Psychologist Carl Rogers once said the biggest block to personal communication is one's person's inability to listen intelligently, understandably, and skillfully to another person. Another wise man once said that talking is sharing, but listening is caring. If we don't listen, sometimes it can be very costly. There was a trucking company dispatcher who cost the company $100,000 because he wasn't listening. They were talking to him about a shipment to Portland, and that's where he stopped listening. And he wound up sending several trucks to Portland, Oregon, when they were supposed to go to Portland, Maine. But see, he stopped listening after they said Portland. They didn't hear the rest of it. And things like that can happen to us. If you stop listening, if you don't listen to your children, or you don't listen to your spouse or your family or your coworkers or whoever it is you may be interacting with, we have to listen to those people and not ignore them. Stephen Covey says, "Seek first to understand, then be understood." So many people would have such happier lives if they would only follow that simple rule. So now we've talked about a couple of things out of James. Let God lead you. All things come from God. Good things come from God. Listen first, then speak. And one final word of advice is live out what you believe. We first become conscious that we want to really follow Jesus, and we want to listen to the gospel of Jesus, and we try to absorb as much as we can. But there comes a time when you have to put that into practice. And that's what we've been talking to downstairs on Wednesday evenings, about discipleship and about making disciples. There comes a time when you take what you have learned, what you have heard, and apply that out in the world. James tells us further on in James, past what I was reading this morning, be doers of the word and not merely hearers who deceive themselves. And he offers kind of a way to look at that, a crucial point. He goes by, if you look in the mirror this morning, look at your face, and as soon as you walk away, you forget what you look like. You forget who you are. So you wonder if the idea that you're carrying around with you is really you. Or you walk into that staff meeting and kind of look starry-eyed like you just woke up. Or you'd go to a ball court to play basketball with some friends in a suit because you didn't know who you were or what you were doing. Be doers of the word, not merely hearers who deceive themselves. Sometimes those things happen in our church. People attend week after week and they don't really absorb anything. Or maybe they do absorb things, but they just don't apply it. They don't use it out in the world. Doers who act will be blessed in their doing, James tells us. And if you think about it, anytime you have done something good for somebody, you have gone out of your way to help somebody, it makes you feel pretty good. You are blessed by that as much as the person that you helped is blessed. Bob McAllister was a journalist. 23 years old, he was the attaché for Strom Thurmond, Senator Strom Thurmond at the time. He would go with him to the Senate. He would go with him to talk with the president. And after a while, he became a broadcast journalist. He would work 12 hours a day to make a name for himself. He got married, but that soon failed because 12 hours a day, he hardly ever saw his wife. And then he would set even higher goals for himself. He was really trying to make it in the world. One hot, sweltering day, he had left to go to work early, and he noticed that there was something large blocking a part of the road ahead, something in the middle of the road, and cars were just passing within inches of it. And as he got up to it, he noticed it was a wheelchair with a man who was desperately trying to get down the road, sweating. So he stopped, and he asked the man what he was doing. And the man told him that he was on his way to a nearby mission to pick up some soup for his friends. This was a 7-mile round trip, and he was doing it in a wheelchair, or trying to. So Bob loaded him up, carried him on his errand, brought food to his friends, spent the day talking with this man, and really got to know what it was like to be poor like that. And it was interesting because he thought to himself he'd written speeches about poverty in Washington. He'd reported news about homeless families, and he'd even given to charities. But before that day, that hot summer day, he had never really seen poverty up close. And he still wonders how he could have been so near all those years, yet so far away. He became a doer. And today his life is more satisfying than it has ever been since he put his faith into action. James offers practical advice for living as Christians today. He tells us to follow God, listen before speaking, do good things for people, and help out. And finally, reading the Bible helps us lift our gaze from the circumstances around us to Christ. Charles Stanley tells a really neat story about back when he was starting out in ministry. And he was getting frustrated. He was struggling with opposition and conflicts, and he just didn't know what to do. Well, one Sunday, one of the elderly members of the church invited him to her apartment for lunch. He was very hesitant. And she said, "You really need to come." So he agreed. He met her downstairs at the retirement community where she lived. They had lunch together, and then they rode the elevator up to her apartment. Entering the apartment, she said, "Now, son, I don't want you to sit down. I want to show you something." She took him to a place in her living room, and there she had a picture of Daniel in the lion's den hanging on the wall. And she looked at Charles Stanley, and she says, "I want you to tell me what you see." Of course, he went through all the theological stuff and about talking about how he wound up in the lion's den and all these different things. She goes, no. "I want you to tell me what you see." He says, "I'm not sure. I don't understand." She says, "Look at Daniel. Look at the lions around him. The lions are sitting there quiet with their mouths closed, not even moving. And Daniel is sitting there and he's looking up at God. He's not looking at the situation around him. He's looking up to God. And that's what we need to do." And he realized at the time that that's what he needed to do. Instead of worrying about all these conflicts and struggles around him, he needed to be looking to God. So I encourage you to spend 15 minutes a day in the Bible. Just read the New Testament if that's all you want to read. But start at the beginning and read to the end if you have time. You will find out all kinds of really good things about how things were, how we got to where we are, all the prophecies of Jesus, and how they could have missed it. And then all the great things that Christ did for us and how things are going to end. But spend 15 minutes a day in the Bible and you'll be amazed what you learn. God's truth for our lives, it will lift you up from your circumstances, and it might even help you to be doers, not just hearers of the word. And that's why I like the book of James, because it tells you how to live. It encourages you. It lets you know that God will provide if you ask. He'll give you wisdom. He'll provide for your needs. And we also have to learn to listen. Not just listen to those around us, but listen to God. And when you hear you need to be doing something, do it. Be doers of the word. Amen.